Good afternoon. This is Michael Osterlink, and I'm speaking with Lori Wallach. She's with TradeWatch. Lori, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Well, welcome back. Last time we spoke, we spoke about the Libertarian, Conservative, and Tea Party concern about the loss of national sovereignty when it comes to the U.S.-Korea free trade deal. And that is obviously still a concern because that issue has not been dealt with. But there's also a second concern, which you've brought to my attention. It's the National Security Conservatives' concern that this trade deal will allow hard currency from the U.S. through South Korea to the North, to the North Koreans, violating our sanctions and giving them hard currency to do as they see fit, which in most cases would be to continue to miniaturize their nuclear weapons and continue to work on their missile delivery vehicles and then spread the technology to their friends in Pakistan and, I guess, Iran as well, seeing the new report that came out from the UN recently. Can you speak to this as a problem and how it can be addressed?
Well, the main problem is related to the question about the sovereignty threats posed by the trade agreement. The trade agreement requires, in its first chapter, Article 1.3, quote, the parties, that means the countries, shall ensure that all necessary measures are taken in order to give effect to the provisions of this agreement. What that means, translated out of legal jargon, is that we are required to conform our domestic laws to all of the rules in this international agreement. And herein lies the problem, because one of the rules says that we must not only allow entry into the U.S., but indeed under preferable duty-free terms, for any good that's assembled in South Korea that has up to 65% non-South Korean content. And here's the loophole. It doesn't say non-Korean, South Korean content from where. So, of course, China, Vietnam, but also North Korea. And particularly worrying is that there's a very large border sweatshop zone in North Korea where South Korean firms already are employing 44,000 North Korean workers. That's supposed to generate about $3 million a month right now for the Kim dictatorship. But right now, we can keep those products out. Under the free trade agreement, we'd have this new obligation to let them in.
Now, can you tell us a little about this industrial center? It's the Kaesong Industrial Center, is that correct?
That's correct. It is about 40 miles north of Seoul, just over the demilitarized zone. It's a big industrial complex surrounded by high fences with razor wire. North Korean workers are bused in every day. They pass through sort of a dormitory where they put on uniforms, are broken into teams, and marched off to different facilities with North Korean minders. They're big megaphone speakers up on poles shooting out messages about their beloved leader in the Kim regime. There are South Korean managers who come in also from a bus. They don't stay there. They're not allowed to. They come in for the work day and leave again. There are 120 South Korean companies right now, 44,000 workers. But the companies don't pay the workers. The companies pay the Kim regime hard currency. Now, they don't pay a lot. It's an outrageous price, 28 cents to 45 cents, slave wages, as if we could compete against that no matter how efficient. But on top of that, the cash, the hard currency, goes to the Kim regime. They pay those workers about 45% of their wages back in coupons for the company stores that are inside the complex. And the thing that's worrisome is some of the biggest brand name companies in South Korea, the ones who have lots of exports here, are involved. So Hyundai has the lease for this whole complex. They negotiated with the North Korean government, as well as the South Korean government was involved. And they're just having signed a lease a year ago to expand it tenfold so that there'll be 400,000 North Korean workers, and they project that will generate $1 billion a year for the North Korean regime.
That's a big difference than 3 or 4 million that they're getting, what, a month prior to this?
Well, the three million is scary, and if you sort of look at how much it's taken them to get this far in their nuclear program, not a lot of money, relatively speaking. But when you think of a billion a year, and we put these sanctions in place explicitly to avoid those kind of hard currency flows, not just for the national security purpose, but you know, we don't want to be party to basically shoring up a Stalinist regime that abuses its people, denies them the most basic freedoms. I mean, that is a government that we do not want to be supporting financially. And so right now we have the ability to keep out of the U.S. anything that has been in any way processed with any parts from North Korea, having anything to do with North Korea. But if this agreement were to go into effect, we have an international law obligation, which we are required in our domestic law, if this passes, to conform our domestic law to meet, to let in stuff that meets what are called the rules of origin, how much in-country content, how much South Korean content. In this crazy agreement, it counts the South Korean if it's only 35% value South Korean. And then with this loophole, the rest of it can come from North Korea and right into the Kim dictatorship's pocket.
Now, it's been argued by some that the sanctions, in fact, will protect the American consumer from products from North Korea into South Korea through the Kaesong Industrial Center and protect us from giving our hard-earned money to the North. But you're saying that the sanctions we have placed now will actually not do that.
Well, that's not how trade agreements work. I mean, the obligation that I read in Article 1.3 requires us explicitly, when we pass an agreement, the whole agreement's text becomes federal law, and the federal law obligation, the federal government's obligation, is to conform all of our domestic laws to meet those rules. The rest of that clause goes on to, by the way, say we have to conform state law as well. That's not relevant in this case, but it's the kind of thing that has made Ron Paul and other conservatives very concerned about these trade agreements and their sovereignty and states' rights implications. But the way it works is you have to have either taken an exception to protect existing laws that don't meet the rules, or you have to change your laws to meet the rules. So what's a very worrying feature is if you look in the agreement, in the annexes, in the appendixes, they list the different laws that both the United States and Korea have taken as exceptions. So, for instance, there are a bunch of other kinds of what are effectively import licenses, rules that say you can't bring anything into this country unless it has a license, and when it comes to North Korea, we just don't grant them. So they gave an exception for a license that has to do with sustainable forestry. Can't import certain kind of raw logs unless there's a license attached to them. They didn't do that for what's called the Office of Foreign Asset Control, OFAC, and that's the system, that is the sanction system for North Korea. So we had an opportunity to safeguard our national security policies. We just didn't. And so, no, unfortunately, the law goes. The trade agreement trumps.
And what's the Obama administration's response to the arguments that, this trade agreement will violate our own intentions when it comes to our national security interests with North Korea?
Well, their general comment is, oh, you must misunderstand. And then when different members of Congress have dug down into the specifics and said, okay, we'd love to be shown wrong. Here is the legal problem that we see. Here's where you should list an exception. Here's what the obligations are. Show us where we're wrong. They change the subject. They say, well, but we don't have to accept any products actually assembled in North Korea. And we say, no, we understand that. That's so far the truth. Could change, but that's true right now under the agreement. You took an exception for that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about things assembled in South Korea, 65% of the value of which is North Korean, which is currently banned, which is a lot of money. And they say, well, look at this provision over here. This is, it says you can't take things assembled in North Korea into the country. And we say, no, no, no. Back over here where the problem is. They just cannot refute it because, unfortunately, it's a real problem.
Now, I imagine and I know that there are members of Congress who share our concern on these issues. Can you name some names and what they're attempting to do to bring this to the attention of other members of Congress as well as put pressure on the White House?
Well, the guy who actually for a very long time has been pointing to this is a congressman who is a member from the House of Representatives who's on the Foreign Relations Committee, who's on the sub. He was the chair of the subcommittee that's on terrorism, nonproliferation, and trade. He's the guy who oversees these sanction programs for many years. And he, his name is Brad Sherman, he's from Los Angeles, has been reaching out to some of his conservative colleagues who've also been champions of these programs, people like Congressman Dana Rohrabacher from California, to try and make sure on a bipartisan basis that whatever a member of Congress thinks about the actual trade agreement, some think it's fine, some think it's a problem, but whatever you think about that agreement, this problem on the national security issue and the gutting of our North Korea sanctions has got to get fixed. You can be for this agreement, still want to fix this. And so the two of them, amongst others, have been trying Sherman for 3 years, first to get the Bush administration, now the Obama administration, to fix it. And now they're just going to really start to publicize it, because so far neither the Bush administration before nor the Obama administration now have been willing to fix it. It's totally fixable. And so as a result, they're starting to publicize it to get an uproar to get it done. It's got to get fixed.
Great. Well, for people who are listening who want to learn more about the national security concerns we've just spoken about, perhaps the other sovereignty issues that we spoke about last time, some of the issues concerning human rights that you brought up, where will they find out more information?
Well, there are two good websites. There's a STOP. Is it NAFTA with Korea? Korea NAFTA? The conservative website, stopkoreanafta.org. It's a very good one. And ours is tradewatch.org. And both of those will give you information on both the sovereignty issues and on the national security issue.
Great. Well, this is Michael Osterlink, and I've been speaking with Lori Wallach with Tradewatch. Lori, thank you for joining us today and having this conversation. As we get closer to an actual vote in the House, as more information becomes available, hopefully you will join us again to continue this conversation.
It would be my honor.